investigations into Hamotzi Mechaver Olavaraya. So we've seen so far that there are a number of things we have to figure out. That the Gemara tells us this principle in the context of what seems to be a machlokas with Sumchus. We have to figure out, is that a wide-ranging machlokas or is it a very particular machlokas? And the nature of the din seems to be at issue. It seems to be at issue because there is a machlokas what the source is, whether it is a pasuk or a svara or possibly not even true or not always true. And we went through some possibilities as to what the nature of the limud from the pasuk is. I hope you had an enlightening experience this Shabbos listening to Kriyas HaTorah and watching all our themes be displayed and getting a little bit of chazara and a little bit of involvement. So the question of whether it is the makar, whether the pasuk is the makar or the svara is the makar, what's the nature of the svara, is all an interesting mix of possibilities. So as we take this topic further now and we look at a little bit more background information, so we have to try to start asking ourselves some general questions here. Is Hamotzi Mechaver or Olav Haraya, is it one concept, or are we seeing here a few different concepts, and they possibly will have different structures? Is this tied into the concept of Muchzak, or is it really an independent idea? Or is it a little bit of both in light of the previous question? Is it sometimes reflective of the Din Muchzak, or in sometimes separate from that? And that's also going to certainly bring us into our questions regarding the next sugya of Ein Olchem B'mam and Acher Harov, and where that comes from. And on another plane, what exactly is the impact? And here, just to really ask the questions in a different way, and we'll see that this is a question that a number of Acharonim deal with. So maybe let's ask three questions which all really are connected to each other. One is, what does muchzak mean? Is muchzak just a practical reality? Or does it have some significance as far as proving a point? It's a general question. What is the impact of chazaka? Did you guys get to see the Tosfos in Bava Metzia this morning put on the list? Well, just to give you a sense of what it was there for, as you mentioned, the first sugya in Bava Metzia, which is a very involved sugya, and halavai we had the whole semester to go through every prat of that and then plug it back in here, you'll see a lot more insight from that also. But the first mission in Bava Metzia talks about different scenarios in how you could have a conflict over property and how you deal with them. So, for example, if the first Mishnah says two people are holding on to a talis, so then we split it. So, Rishonim have different ways of explaining why and how and when that is. But one comment, the Tosfos over there that I pointed you to, says that if they're both holding on, Shnaim Ochsin Batalis, each one is holding on to part of the talis, so is that a sense of a chazaka that each one has on their part of the talis? So do we have to leave each one with his chazaka, essentially half the talis? And if so, what does that mean? Does it mean that somehow that indicates that it's true, that they actually own that part? Is that realistic, that they each actually own half the talis? Maybe it is. Maybe they both found it at the same time. But it raises the questions of what does this chazaka mean? So that's a general question. We have to figure out what does a chazaka indicate? And then we have to figure out, is our din of Hamotzi Mechaveraya completely dependent on chazaka, or is it a separate concept? And connected to that, so what does Hamotzi Mechaveraya then mean? Does it mean that if I want to get something from Jed and I don't have a raya, so then it is halachically jetz? Or does it mean simply that there is no way for me to physically acquire it without a proof? But we don't really know that it's considered halachically to be jetz. We know that, practically speaking, I need a raya in order to get it. Or as some achronim phrase the question, and we'll see this a little bit more, is this a din vadai, that basically without a raya, the halacha sees it as definitely jetz? Or do we say, no, we don't really know that it's jetz. We just know that I can't take it away from him without evidence. So we're no more enlightened than we were before. But practically speaking, I can't take something without a raya. And we'll discuss what difference that makes. Okay, so also part of the background of the Gemara has been discussing until now, so there seems to be, among other things, a machlokes, whether this din is pashut or not pashut. Does it need a pasuk or does it not need a pasuk? So it's worth taking a look at the Pnei Yeshua over here, where he contributes a little bit to the complexity, try to figure out whether it's pashut or not, that there are a couple of conflicting chazakas here. And if that's really true, then it seems like things really aren't so simple. So what conflicting chazakas do we possibly have? Well, there is a chazaka that the person who is claiming something is not necessarily to be taken as a liar. Should be assumed to not be a liar, so therefore there's a certain chezkas kashrus, so to speak, on him. There is a parallel chazaka like that on the one who's holding it. And then there's maybe also the chazaka of the fact that he has it. So then maybe it's a clash not of one chazaka against nothing, but maybe it's three chazakas in play, and it's 2-1. Now, if that's indeed the case, that creates certainly complexity. But not everyone necessarily read it that way. But it's certainly a added layer that could possibly be a part of the story. It's also interesting to mention, I was thinking of talking about this on Thursday when we talked about Parsha Shir, but we can still mention it now. Looks like, again, all year long, where we're learning about Parsha Mishpatim. Maybe this was a little bit more nogeya just to the flow of the psukim. So if we assume that Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya is connected to the pasuk in the end of Mishpatim, so there are those who ask, why at that moment? A number of the Mefarshim and Chumash raised this question. That why at that moment was that the time to teach Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya? And it just opens up some interesting questions, because there are those who suggest, for example, if you look in the Chassam Sofer, Al HaTorah, the Chassam Sofer discusses this, and the Paris Yosef Al HaTorah talks about this also, if I recall correctly, a number of Svarim bring up this issue, that maybe there was a fundamental difference between how Moshe Rabbeinu dealt with issues and how anyone other than him would deal with issues. And this is relevant also to Parshas Yisrael the week before, and the whole suggestion about the judicial process that comes out in that parsha. So there are those who suggest that Moshe Rabbeinu, due to his Ruach HaKodesh, due to his unique access and his particular role, that he was entitled to adjudicate things in a way that other Dayanim weren't. So he could draw on all these benefits that he had to figure out who's right and who's wrong. But Davka, when he is not going to be available, and he says, okay, I'm going up to the mountain, so those who stay behind are going to be managing things. So you now, you need a raya. It's more of a formalized process. And a little bit of synergy, if you recall, we spoke about these issues in the Haftorah Shir for Parshas Miketz. Recall the whole story about Shlomo HaMalach Mishpato Shul Shlomo and the whole discussion in the literature that when Shlomo, in the famous story about the baby, when he came up with his conclusion, so was he doing that based on his own assessment of the story? Was there a process there? Was that subject to Hamotzei Mechaber Lefarayeh, if you recall? We talked about that a little bit. So are there different rules for different Dayanim, or is there a minimum as far as what a Dayan is allowed to utilize from his own perspective in terms of if he feels that he knows the truth here? Is he also bound still within this system? So that's an important question. And just in terms of tying it into the narrative, there are those who claim that that's why this the halacha is taught here. That it was specifically a difference between Moshe and other Dayanim. So when Moshe was not going to be available, and he says, okay, now you have to go to others, now it becomes relevant to Motzei Mechaber Lefarayeh. So that has interesting implications also to consider. Okay, so I mentioned a few people privately, I didn't put this on the list, but did anyone look at the Torah Tanima on the Pasuk? And I mentioned that to one or two people, and no discrimination, just happened to come up in conversation. So it's relevant to the following point. So now that we have all these questions out here, so do we have any information as to, are there exceptions to this rule? Do we always say Hamotzei Mechaber Lefarayeh Harayah? And if so, how do you relate to those exceptions? Hi.
The Gemara Tzulos with the brother who's scary and the Rigmokam.
Okay, so Jed says, yeah, I know an exception. There's a Gemara in Tzubis, which has a story we're going to have to try to clarify a little bit more in a few minutes. But the Gemara in Tzubis has a case where you have an individual who wants to claim his portion of an inheritance from Scary Mary. Scary Murray seems to be his persona, a guy named Murray, who was denying that he owes this guy anything. I don't know who you are. I'm not your brother. So the normal process should be a motzi mechaver l'varaya. It's the Gemara in Ksubas and Daf Chav Zayin and Beis. And there the Gemara says that nonetheless the situation was switched because the brother or the alleged brother said, I have witnesses, but it's not going to work because Murray is scary and they're not going to testify. They're afraid of him. So then the Gemara says, and we're going to leave some of this open to further interpretation in a few minutes, that, okay, so Murray is told, all right, you have to bring witnesses that he's not your brother. That's the language of the Gemara. So he says, what are you talking about? Emotzi mechaver l'varayeh? To which he's told, sorry, you are too scary of an individual to get that benefit. Any tough guy like you is subject to a different rule, and we're switching things around. So says Jed, okay, there you have it. We don't always say Hamotzei Mechaber Lefarayeh. So there's details about that Gemara that we have to figure out. I was talking to some of the guys this morning, and I'll fill that in a minute. But on the surface, that sounds like it's an exception. Now, we don't always know how to relate to questions from the Bavli to cost the Yerushalmi. We've already seen some difference in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi on this issue of Hamotzei Mechaber Lefarayeh, that the Rishalmi in Sanhedrin quotes the same pasuk but does not object that it should be a svara, while in our Gemara it's a machlokas. But here's another possible discrepancy. According to the Talmud Yerushalmi in Bav Metzia, did you get to see that this morning? So there the Yerushalmi says basically what about Hamotzei Mechaber Lefarayeh? But there is essentially one exception. And what's that exception? Hi. Yes, so with the minig, that's the exception. Now this is also itself a fascinating topic. Yes? Essentially, that's what it sounds like. That the minig is it's itself subject to a little bit of interpretation of what it means. But it sounds like, essentially from the context of the Yerushalmi, that when you have a practice that's established as far as labor laws, as far as what workers are expected to do. So then the minig is going to define what the terms are. And in that context, the Yerushalmi has a phrase which appears elsewhere as well. And it's a very striking phrase, and it's interesting and important discussion to know when it comes up and when it doesn't come up. As a phrase, there are minig mevatel halacha. That the minig is going to establish itself over the halacha. I remember I once spoke at an event here in YU for business law, or people who were coming for some seminars on this issue, and this question came up about the expectations, what is put on a worker in terms of hours and different things like that, and travel time. And I told them that the Gemara comes last on these issues, which sounds surprising, but the Gemara says it comes, that's the Bavli in Bava Metzia, where the Gemara says that Gemara gives you a certain din as far as how workers are expected to behave, what hours they're supposed to keep, etc. And then the Gemara says, well, why do we need that? Why don't we just have it spelled out between the employer and the employee what they do? And then Gemara says, okay, they didn't spell it out. He says, okay, so let's look to the minig. What's the local minig? And then the Gemara concludes that you have to say there's no minig. It's a new town, and they haven't established any minig. So then, okay, then we have a halacha. So essentially, the Gemara comes last, that ideally, if you want to figure out what the expectations are, you should have a clear expectation set out between the boss and the employee. And if you don't have that, then we look to what the minig is. And then if there's no minig, then we'll have to have a din for what the basic default is. So in the middle there is the minig. The minig has a lot of power. So the Yerushalmi draws this connection that the minig is going to establish who's right and who's wrong in a labor dispute. And everything else we say, Hamotzi mechaveru olivaraya, except for this. In other words, if you have one guy trying to be toveya from somebody else, and the minig is on his side, so then he doesn't need to bring a raya. Very fascinating. But Mordechai quotes this lahalacha from Rav Haigon and says that when somebody is trying to change the minig, then the raya is on him, even if he's a Muslim. Now, there's an interesting discussion to try to figure out. The Mordechai in Bava Metzia, where he talks about this, he quotes the source that it's got to be a minig that has stature al pi din Torah, which you have to figure out why that is. I mean, we talk about minig in different contexts, let's say in contemporary usage. So if you talk about, let's say, a minig to do a certain thing in shul or not to do a certain thing in shul, or a minig, not to eat kidney, or something like that. So we have minhagim that are based on halachic concerns. And then if the minig is not connected to any kind of halachic factor, so then we say, okay, that minig is not meaningful. But here you would think that it's not so necessary, that here we're talking about a minig, meaning what are the expectations when people hire workers? So what do they think is the premise? So the premise, it's hard to see why that has to be based specifically on Torah values necessarily, but that's the way it's still quoted in some of the Rishonim. But in any event, Yerushalmi says, okay, so this is the exception. We don't say Hamotzi mechaveru olav haraya in that context. So it's fascinating on a couple of levels. First of all, so is that the only exception? So when I asked for exceptions a minute ago, Jed told me a different one. So the Torah Tamima raises that question. Torah Tamima says, what do you mean it's not the only exception? We see another exception. But in addition, there's something else to consider here. Is it really an exception? The language, okay, suggests it's an exception, chutz mizu, but Is it really an exception, Shmuley?
Sorry, the exception being the case in the Yerushalmi?
Yeah, which it sounds like it's a stand-in for a general category, that when there's any kind of situation where the minig points in one direction, so then the other guy who is arguing against the minig, he has to bring a raya, even if he's a muchzak. So, is that really an exception? How could you formulate it a little bit differently? What do you think? Is there a, I mean, the language says, yeah, everything except for this. But is that really an exception, or is there a way to phrase it that it doesn't really mean it's an exception?
It might be saying that it's a rule that has limitations in its application.
Okay, but that sounds a little bit like an exception, too.
It's just a different way to say it.
Right, but is there a way to phrase it that maybe it's not even an exception with other synonyms? Yeah, Sam?
I guess the case doesn't fall under the umbrella of Mexico,
right? Okay, getting closer. Yeah,
that's the same thing.
Right, so again, it's still not there yet. But yeah?
Is it a raya?
Oh, why don't you say it like that? That the thrust of the Gemara is to say that the minig has very significant power in terms of revealing what the situation here is. And then maybe that is a riot. That if you want to look to the minig, that's going to have authority to allow you to draw from. Hi.
It doesn't sound like it fits into the word so well.
The word sounds like it's an exception. Right, but so it's certainly we're starting from that premise. But maybe, because we have to figure out why it's an exception. Right, so it could be that if we're going to be willing to take the language a little bit less than 100% precise, that maybe it's not really an exception, but maybe we're saying that this is a raya, that this is significant. Hi.
You could say the same thing in Rove.
Ah, exactly. So then that's going to force us to compare it to Rove, you know, because you would think that. So then this is why, again, these sugyas are so strongly connected, because then we're going to have to consider that following this, that if that's true, that a minig counts as a raya, so then we'll have to figure out why does Rove not count as a raya? That apparently the minig is going to have a weight which Rove doesn't. So that gives us a little bit of a platform to try to figure out exactly what we mean by Rove, and why is it different than minig. So that's itself interesting. Now, that's one point to consider. So, the Torah Tamima, so he says, okay, we can accept this, but what about the fact that it's not the only exception? And he quotes Jed. What about Jed's Gemara in Subas? Where it seems like there's another exception. The case of Scary Murray. So he assumes that it's not just that it got left out. Again, you know, it's interesting how much, you know, this is a whole structural question, how much to assume that the Yerushalmi should be responsible for counting everything that's in the Bavli. That you have technical issues with. But
Pnei Moshe
what?
Points out, I think that the Gemara mentions that it's a certain Aser also. I don't know if the
Pnei Moshe over there, Bavitsia? Yeah,
I think that's the
case
of the Maisa.
Okay. So, how do you think you could resolve this? I know the Torah Shmima has his own suggestion. What would you think? Is there a difference in assuming that we have to take this as a real question, which it's a little arguable, but assuming that you have to expect consistency here between these two Talmuds. So what is, in a sense like this, so what's the difference between the two types of cases? Shmuley?
I have something that I realize that makes sense.
Okay, but maybe you want to try it anyway, or you don't want to...
sharpen it.
Okay, you can sharpen it. So, yeah, any other suggestions? So, the Torah Tamima, the way he understands it, is that he assumes that the difference is that the case of Minig, that's a din minatora that establishes things fully, while the Gemara in Ksubis is referring to a takana de Rabbanan. That essentially, it doesn't really reflect the inherent factors of the halacha here, but that Chazal had to make, either broadly or even specifically, a innovation here to address a specific situation. And in his understanding, what it sounds like he's saying is that really, in that case, in Ksubis also, Minat Torah should still be a Motzi Mechaver Lo Haraya. There's nothing fundamentally different about it. But there's going to be an injustice, because you could have a scenario where a party who's in the wrong can intimidate others and squelch the possibility of a raya. So from a Tikkun Olam perspective, we have to do something to address that. Sam? Alright, so we have to figure out that. Although I want to get to that in a minute, so we'll have to try to figure out what exactly is going on in that Gemara. So that's a point is well taken. But just first, how the Torah Tumah has it, so he essentially understands it like this: that really, that this is, that the Gemara in Ksubis should not be taken as showing some kind of an actual permanent exception, because that's a takana d'rabbanan. That is a matter of rabbinic policy. That they are overriding the halacha. That really the halacha should still be the same, but there is a concern of a possible injustice here. So in order to protect society, we say that these gangsters, and that's really what it is. And this concept comes up in Choshen Mishpat a lot about the concern of somebody who's violent or who's intimidating, and how that affects the dynamics of the din. This is not the only place it appears; it comes up a lot. So we have to do something about such personalities. We can't let bullies run the world. So this is a takana d'rabbanan to deal with that. But that's not what the Yerushalmi is talking about. Yerushalmi is talking about a inherent difference. Jed?
Just when you mentioned that, I remember we discussed in Sanhedrin a few years ago that there's an isser, some sort of isser of holding back a... maybe it was in this parsha.
Holding back testimony?
About holding back a testimony because mm-hmm. you're afraid of the person. So mm-hmm. how does that come into play here? Shouldn't that be just an isser for these Edom to hold back their testimony?
And the Gemara suggests that it is an isser, right? Because the Gemara says that that ultimately when these Edom come back, that shouldn't we still be afraid? And this is, I'm going to hold off on that for a second because it requires explaining more of the details we haven't explained yet. So I'll hold on for one second. I'll address that in a second. But in any event, so what the Torah Tumimah is basically saying is that these aren't on the same level. That the Gemara above, the Yerushalmi above Metzia is talking about a Daraisa exception. And the Gemara in Ksubis is talking about a rabbinic innovation. It's not a real exception. So, without necessarily arguing on that, we could say it a little bit differently. I mean, this distinction in general highlights different points. Like, for example, like we said a few minutes ago, we're not even sure if the Yerushalmi is really telling an exception. So it's hard to know what to do with that line of, this is the one exception. It sounds like you could also say that it's saying that this really is considered a raya, and that this is here to establish the authority of the Minig. The Minig is so powerful that counts as a raya. And that's connected to the point that Torah Tumimah makes. And he says that the power of a minig is something which is binding on a level of Minat Torah, and this be different Kabbalah. And therefore, we take that very seriously. And it has an impact, it has authority on the level like it's a din Minat Torah. And that's not to be put in the same category with the Gemara in Ksubis. But the Gemara in Ksubas itself requires a little bit greater explanation. Because what exactly is going on? And to expand a little bit, and this here where I'll read you some stuff, courtesy of our mobile unit here, but in terms of what is the interpretation of that story in the Gemara in Ksubas. So, is the Gemara saying that the burden of proof is on the Muchzak here? Is that really what it's saying? It's saying that normally, B'chol HaTorah Kula, Hamotzi Mechaver, all of a Raya. So if you're trying to get money, you have to bring a Raya. But in this case, it's the other way around. That the one who is being sued, he's the one who has to bring a Raya. And if he doesn't, what happens? So as some of the guys were asking before, does that mean that we take away from him? Or does that mean that we split it? Do we apply one of the other rules of Suffolk? So the Gemara is not really clear. I mean, one thing that does seem to be stated in the Gemara is that he, in terms of what he's being asked to establish, so the language of the Gemara is, Zil Aisinu At Delavo Chuchu. So you should now bring witnesses that say he's not your brother. So it sounds like on the surface that he's being told yes to prove his case, the case that requires, the case that would allow him to hold on to his money, he's being told he has to prove that point. So what does that mean? Is he bringing different witnesses? Is he going to bring some other kind of proof? So it doesn't sound like that from the way it's brought in the Rambam or in the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ritva goes into it a little bit more detail, so I'll read you all of those things. I didn't actually ask you to look at them on the list, so we'll look at it together. But now to go back to Jed's point for a second, because after he's asked to bring proof for his position, so just really a question about that?
More about the Adam in general.
Mm-hmm.
If let's say the other Adam didn't testify on the guy,
mm-hmm.
but because they were scared to or whatever, and then the guy now brings a new Adam to bring a Raya mm-hmm. for himself, what's the din of the other Adam? Do they become Zomim if they didn't testify? Like, how do you?
No, they're not Zomim for sure. A Zomim is a special Chiddush that applies to a certain kind of scenario. Here, the question is, they become Adim that are contradicted, maybe, except they're not because they didn't say anything.
Exactly.
Right? But it sounds like from the Gemara, and we'll see how the Rishonim talk about this, that even though he's being told to bring proof for his side, but it sounds like we're talking about the same people because, so the Gemara says, so should we still not worry that they're going to lie even after he brings them? So the last line of this part of the Gemara is Hashanami Asim Shakri Tartilo Abdi. Two things they're not going to do wrong. That they didn't want to come in the first place, that they were silent, and to come and lie, those two they're not going to do. So I was saying in terms of Jed's previous point, is there an Aveira here? Yeah, the assumption is that they're not just entitled to decide whether they're going to come or not, they're doing something wrong by being scared of this guy. And maybe it's understandable, but that we have the language here that there is some kind of an avera, so to speak. So, what seems like from most of the Rishonim is that the Edim he's being told to bring are the same Edim that we're going to testify against him. Which is interesting, because then it sounds like we're not so much saying that the burden of proof is on him, rather that he's got to deal with the situation. So just to read to you, let's start with the Ritva. So the language of the Ritva over there in the Gemara is, so Hachi Garcina, here's what the Girsa should be, Zil Isnehu, you should bring them. Klomar hacha edim halalu sheze omer demistafim minach. These same edim who the first guy said, the other guy said, they're afraid of you. You should bring those edim. V'hachimuchach mehad amalei hashtanami asim shakri. And that's what we can figure out from the last line in the discussion that says, well, won't they still lie? So it sounds like we're talking about the same Eidim. Umidhadrina tarte lo avdi. So the response, they're not going to do two things wrong. Alma osana Eidim atzmam. Umbraloshia v'eidim. It sounds like those Eidim themselves, those were the ones that he was told he should bring. The chain badin. And so too, that's also that also seems to be logically compelling. Shema to Omer Machaivehu Lahavi Eidim She'eno Echav. That Eino Achiv. That if we're saying that what the Gemara means is he should bring his own Eidim, that this guy is not his brother, right? That's how it first sounded like. Says the Ritva, Zad Davar Rachoku. That's very far from being likely. Via Ode, and further, the MK, Lo Shavka Chai Lakulu Alma. Then we're making life impossible for people. Shimitvuhi Tviya Alpe. So let's say somebody's going to come and make a claim against you. And then they're going to say, Vyomer Hateveya Shieshlo Eidim Ustafimine. And I'll say, yeah, I have a claim against you, and I have witnesses against you, but they're scared of you. So then, Shinechayiv Lozel Havi Eidim Shukitvarav. Then we're going to say that the burden is going to be on this guy who's the muchzak, because anyone can just come and make a claim and say that he has Eidim, but they're scared. So that's hard to say. It says, v'chein dir perish Rashi, v'chein perish Tosfos. So that's also what it seems like from Rashi. Rashi is not as obviously like that, but it's what he reads from Rashi. And that's what he says from Tosfos as well. So just to look at the Tosfos. Tosfos over there in Ksubas, the language is, so Nirulari, the Mayri Shehevi Eidim, the Omrim Oso Eidosh Ata Shoo. Lo Nomer Lecha Klum Olav. So it sounds like we're talking about the same Eidim. And you have to say, Duraglayim Ladavar Shehu Olam. You have to say that there's already basis to say that he is a violent guy. So Amalei Zil, when they say to him, you should go, perish leich havei osam eidim atzmam, shireim lahayir alecha. That's how Tosfos is now saying it, that those same eidim that are afraid to testify about you, you should go get them, sheidush eino achicha. That they should come testify that you're right. They should come testify that he's not your brother. Oh, Shiomru, Sheinam Yodim, or let them say that they don't know Imhu Achicha Imlav, one way or another. The Kamar Hashtanami, Kevin Shirei Meni Shakru, Lomar Einu Achiv, O Shein Yodim Hu Achiv, so that's what the Gemara is saying, so okay, because they're afraid, won't they still say the opposite? Avlam Ein Reglaim Adavar in their Klaus. You have to assume that there's a Reglaim Adavar, that he's a violent guy, otherwise it doesn't make any sense. Shehenema Lomar Degavar Almohu, that he's going to be able to just claim the guy's violent. Timlokan Kol Adam Yomar Al Chaveru. If now everything will just say that, everybody will just say that about his friend. So Vyavuhu Eidim. And that for that guy should bring Eidim, Vim Loya Vyafsid. Right? So Tosfos is saying a little bit differently, but the same point that the Ritva is getting at, that we're talking about bringing the same Eidim. And the Ritva says it can't be that we're asking him to get different Eidim, because that's already just going to make life impossible for people. Anybody's going to just come with that kind of a accusation. But here Tosfos is adding in also that this whole thing only makes sense if there's some basis to know that he's actually a violent guy. Otherwise, again, it's just going to be too open of a field. Okay. And also from the language of the Gemara, that are we still afraid they're going to lie? Do we really think that just because these witnesses are afraid, the whole world is afraid? So presumably we're talking about the same witnesses. So slightly different ways of saying it, but that's the way Tosfos and the Ritva say, that we're not actually putting the burden of proof on the other guy. We're saying that because of this particular scenario, you should have to be the one to bring the Eidim, and let them, the same Eidim who were scared of you, and let them support your point. Now, if you look at how it's quoted in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, So the language, the Rambam is, sounds like it's focusing even a little bit more differently. That whoever has proof with Eidim, it's his job to bring him to Bezdin. If we know the guy is violent, and he claims that the witnesses are afraid, so this is the way we deal with these violent gangster type people, that we have such a policy. And that's essentially the way that it is quoted in Shulchan Aruch as well. Pretty much the same language. Yeah, it's quoted in the same language in Shulchan Aruch. So there, it sounds like essentially we're saying that the violent guy is being brought in to support the tzad against him. That it's a takana just to deal with his bullying. That because these people are afraid to come and say their testimony, so now you have to come bring them in, so that'll address it. You know, the assumption being that if the guy you're scared of is the guy bringing you in, so then you're going to be able to testify. So it does change things a little bit. It sounds like it's not so much that we're saying the burden of proof is on Muchzak, which from one line of the Gemara it sounded like a little, but he said bring proof that he's not your brother. But it sounds from the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch and maybe from these Rishonim that it's not really about that, but that this bully is being told he's got to deal with the Edom because his violence and his intimidation has created an unfair playing field. So if that's the case, so then maybe it's even less of an exception. Right? We're not addressing, when we talk about Hamotzi Mechaver Lefaraya, so normally we assume that it's about who has the burden of proof, whose case has to be proven, as opposed to whose case can just be considered the default. But in this context, it sounds like we're not necessarily saying about whose case has to be proven. We're saying who has the tircha here. Who has to be the one to deal with it? And if that's the case, it could put a different understanding on the svara that we've struggled to understand, the kayv le'kiva. Right? So the guy who is sick, he goes to the doctor. So maybe it doesn't mean, in this, at least in this application, that you have to prove your case because you're sick and you want help. It means that just as far as effort, whose job is it to solve a problem? So it's the problem of the guy who wants something. But if the guy who wants something is unable to do it because you are getting in his way, so then, okay, we should say maybe you should take on the burden yourself. It seems like it's a different kind of emphasis here.
It's not an exception at all. It's the same
right.
It's just shifting on. Maybe you could even view it as there's this, especially with the Riven man, there's Rabbi Mitlover. If he's a Gavrama, then okay, so you messed up the process that's on you to insure, but the process that we're insuring is still Hamotzi Mechaver Lefaraya.
Exactly. That's just like, so maybe that could be a different approach to the Torah Tumim's question, that it's not really an exception. It's that, and that's why it's not going to be listed elsewhere, because this is just a case of, practically speaking, in terms of the broader issue of who has to prove his position, yes, it's still the case that the Motzi has to prove his position. But the impediment to proving it, that this guy's violence is causing, so the court is making him deal with that. And that's essentially all it means. So that's a very limited sense. So what all this does is it gives us a couple of different angles to consider here. What exactly is a Motzi Mechaver Lefaraya focused on? Is it about the burden of establishing the truth of the case? Or is it about just the tircha of attending to the issue? And what's considered an exception and what is just not part of the definition? here? And is it possible that there are many different types? Or two different types. Not many, but at least two different types. So we'll have to continue those tomorrow. And tomorrow I think we should finish up with this and segue into the next part of the Gemara about the Hochma Menacha Rov. But I'll ask you one other question that we'll also try to clarify tomorrow. This is a question some Achronim struggle with. That if you want to say that Hamotzi Mechaver Lo Haraya means that essentially it's safer because if we don't know who's right, then leave it with a muchzak and don't risk taking mammon away from somebody without adequate basis. Is there also a consideration here that the muchzak is in a situation of safek lo sigzol? Do we have a safek deraisa by him also? That if the truth actually is that he's wrong, and we're going to leave the property in his hands instead of giving it to the one who's asking for it, is that possibly a safek gezel? And how does that factor into the equation? So let's quickly recap what we spoke about. So we reframed some of our questions, and we laid out some more questions that we want to figure out. The relationship between a motzmecha v'levaraya and muchzak, and in halchama v'nachar harov, and among the things we're going to have to still try to figure out, are these just policies of behavior, or do they reflect some halachic reality? Both, does muchzak do one or the other? Does motzmecha v'levaraya do one or the other? And are these two dinim the same, or are they two separate dinim? And we talked about the Pnei Yeshua complicating factors by throwing in a few other chazakas. We discussed the question of why in Parshas Mishpatim, if the pasuk is telling us this, why is it saying it specifically there? And it brought up the question of, is there a difference between Moshe and other Dayanim? And that has interesting implications also. And then we talked about, are there exceptions to a Moshe Mechel of Haraya? That on the one hand there's the Yerushalmi about the Minig, and raise the question, is that really an exception, or is that just saying that is a raya, which will give us something to consider how to compare it to Rov. And we discussed whether that's a question, if it's leaving out the kind of situation that's described in the Bavli in Ksubis about this violent guy who's told he's got the burden of proof, and the Torah Tzmima thinks the difference is that Minig Zedin Min HaTorah, and this is Takana Derabanan, that doesn't really affect things. And we discussed it a little bit more. Well, what exactly is going on in the Gemara and Ksuba? It's really not clear. Is the Gemara really saying the burden of proof is on the Muchzak there? Or is it saying that, no, that the proof that the Toveya wants to bring and is impeded because of this guy's bullying, so the bully has to fix that. He has to be the one to bring it and let them testify at his position, but it's not talking about, as it may initially sound like, that he's being told to bring his own evidence, whatever that may be. And then we just throw onto the table one more question. If we were to think it's safer to leave things with the muchzak, does that bring about a safek gezel? And we'll try to bring all this together tomorrow. All right, so we will daven. Daniel, you want to daven for us?